I'm Anne-Marie Green, and welcome to Postmortem. This week, I'm joined by correspondent Peter Van Sant and producer Judy Ryback to discuss their latest episode, The Day My Mother Vanished. If you haven't listened to this episode yet, you know what you can do. You can find it just below this one in your podcast feed. So this case was really unlike others this season because authorities didn't have to figure out who killed Tammy Myers. They had to find the person who admits to killing her. That person is William Greer, and it takes over a decade for authorities to find him, to track him down, and arrest him. That happens in 2017. When did 48 Hours learn about this case?
This case came to us via Michelle Sagona, one of the development producers for This Hour, who actually used to work on America's Most Wanted and interviewed Nikki when she was 8 years old, 9 years old. So all the footage that we have in the show, Michelle was there for that. So she heard about Greer's arrest and the plea deal and brought it to us.
Which made it a very personal story for us to work on. This is a case that infuriates, inspires. The people that we met along the way here, some of them are just remarkable characters. But how this case turned out is just shocking to me and to Judy. And we're still trying to deal with the aftermath of this because it's a very frustrating case.
Mm. Well, let's start with Tammy's daughter, Nikki. She is such a pivotal character in this story. What was it like interviewing her?
Well, she is one of the heroes in this story. Such an inspiring young woman. Try to imagine, anyone listening to this, go back when you were 7 years old. It's a few days before Christmas, and your mother disappears, vanishes off the face of the earth. You never see or hear from her again, and they were so close. And Nikki was 9 years old when she was first interviewed by America's Most Wanted. And she actually read a little poem, and she helped carry the show and inspire a nation to try to find the person responsible for taking her mother away from her. So interviewing her, you sense her enormous heart. She's a gentle soul. And you also sense the pain of all of these years, of all the things in her life she wasn't able to share with her mother because she was taken from them. And the hunt for justice is in her DNA and such a part of her.
Yeah, and we noted that she didn't cry in the interview. She never got emotional. That's how poised she is, how accustomed she is to talking about the story, telling the story, trying to get attention for her mother, for the case. I mean, she is really, really amazing. And, you know, I have to say, I attribute that to her mother and her father. Her mom must have been amazing because Nikki's so strong, and her dad did such a good job of raising her alone. It's remarkable, really.
What was so powerful for us was Nikki's dad, Ryan Myers. Now, folks, I'm going to do a little Texan here for you because he is a classic cowboy, right? He's got the look right out of him, the old Marlboro cigarette ads or a Clint Eastwood Western. He's got a way of talking, that Texas cowboy talk. He starts talking about Tammy, the love of his life, and he starts blubbering. I'm sitting across from him, and I'm almost tearing up. He loved her so much, and the tears that he sheds, and throughout our hour, you see that. It just breaks your heart, and that helps us get so invested in their stories because we so desperately want this to have a happy ending.
Yeah, I just thought, this guy doesn't deserve all of this. It's been such a tough road for him in so many ways.
He's so sweet, too. So sweet.
Okay, let's get to the case. Tammy goes missing on December 19th, 2006. But on December 22nd, 2006, authorities find a highly intoxicated, half-naked man on the side of the road. Who was that and what was going on? Why did they end up out there?
We laugh because, folks, try to just imagine this scenario. A couple of deputies with a rural sheriff's department, they have a call of a pickup truck that's gone off the road. They get there. There's no driver. It's pitch black. They're looking around. They got their flashlights out. And then, by George, here comes a guy out of the darkness wearing just a shirt, no underwear, pants, anything. And what a sight to see. And he comes up and they have a dash cam on them. And he says, I'm sorry, it was an accident. The gun just went off. And the officer is, well, what are you talking about? Tammy, my wife. And the gun went off and I accidentally shot her in the chest and I watched her die. Now, how are you taking all this in? You're just out on patrol. Here's a guy half naked, and he's saying something absolutely, what?
Yeah. And not just that, he tells them where it happened. I mean, he tells them everything they need to know.
Yeah.
Right? But I think what happened was, because they were caught between two sheriff's offices, two jurisdictions, he fell through the cracks a little bit.
Yeah.
Right?
But, I mean, to me, it was stunning that he was out the next day. I mean, I get it. There's two different jurisdictions. But even when I was watching the dash cam, you know, he's intoxicated. He's kind of in and out. It's not sort of a crystal clear statement. But it's enough, you would think, to hold him just a little bit longer.
Right.
Well, remember after he sobered up a bit and they were asking, now, what did you say about what you did to her? Well, I didn't do that. And then he went quiet on them. Also, they sent a couple of deputies over to the house, the other county, to do a welfare check. And they knocked on the door. Nobody answered. They couldn't see anything as they peered through the windows. Now, they didn't go in. I think if they had gone in, they would have seen blood, and this would have a very different ending to it. But the fact that they didn't, according to the officers, he was clearly intoxicated. You know, I think, is this guy just talking out of the side of his mouth? Is this just the alcohol talking to us? It's their county, it's our county, and it just falls through the cracks.
Yeah. And no one goes back to the site where his truck was.
No, they did. They would eventually go back and look for Tammy there. Yeah, they searched for Tammy's body there.
Now, remember, in his truck, they find Tammy's cell phone. So, I mean, you have this link, and eventually they get a search warrant, and they go over and go inside that house. Mm-hmm. And who do they find, Judy, cleaning up in there?
His brother-in-law.
Now, I had a question about that as well, because, I mean, what did he think he was doing there? And even if he didn't suspect anything, once the cops show up, you would think he would have started to ask himself, well, why did he ask me to clean up his house?
I mean, we don't really know, right? They didn't tell us much about that. They didn't charge him with anything. He claimed he didn't know that a crime had occurred. So who knows? I mean, we'll never know how much the brother-in-law knew.
This is clearly a crime scene, and it's a very odd part of this story that is full of oddities.
Right. But like you point out, he was never charged with anything at all. But, you know, later, once authorities hear what Greer's sons say they heard, they decided they're going to charge him. They're going to charge William Greer with first-degree murder. The sons say that they hear him arguing with Tammy, and did they hear gunshots?
Yeah, they heard.
There was arguing they heard. They heard a shot, and then it later came out that they also claim they could hear their father speaking to Tammy, and he says, are you dead? Are you still alive?
Right.
And authorities considered what they heard, including this quote, to be powerful evidence, combined with a man who's confessing, half naked out in the dark, but confessing that he had shot Tammy and watched her die. Hello? I think we got ourselves a case here, right?
Well, even if we don't have a body.
There's no body, but there's everything but.
Right.
I mean, you've got her blood in his house. You've got her phone in his car. Have him on dash cam saying that he shot her and watched her die. And then he flees, folks. What innocent guy flees? And then he lies. I mean, it seems it's on a platter to me, mm-hmm. right?
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. Yeah, I've seen a lot less in bodiless trials. Yeah.
So, as you guys say, William Greer, he's on the run. But thanks to shows like America's Most Wanted, Crime Watch Daily, authorities always seem to have a pulse on him, but he's still able to get away. I mean, people watch these shows, but he's still kind of popping up in different communities, making friends.
Right.
And just kind of bopping along. How was he able to do that?
That's true, right? He was still bopping along. People are watching across the country. You know, it's funny because we asked, like, was this a good thing or a bad thing? Because every time he saw himself on television, he would get up and take off, right? And the marshal said, it's actually a good thing. They want him to keep moving because eventually he'll make a mistake and they'll catch him.
Interesting. And he's not using cards because he's got a bunch of cash from his business, I guess, right?
Probably. And, you know, women would do things for him, pay for things and,
And in New Orleans, when he worked at a deli, they paid him in cash.
Right.
So there wasn't a paper trail.
Right. And he rode a bicycle everywhere.
And he was quite the charmer.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's quite remarkable how agile he was in being able to just pick up and go and then ingratiate himself with someone else like that and just start another new life. And also, think of the casualties that he left behind, because these women, many of them cared deeply. Some of them fell in love with him. But once he got word he was on America's Most Wanted, the most recent edition of this case, he's gone.
You wake in the middle of the night alone in your apartment, and that feeling starts to set in that something is wrong. Realizing your home is no longer safe, you plan your escape. But he has other plans. The details are the kind that stay with you. Water running in an empty apartment. A locked door that shouldn't be locked. That uneasy feeling of being watched. That's the setup for Unhinged, the new immersive game experience on Netflix. Your phone becomes your controller, flashlight, and lifeline to your best friend. As the attacker in your building closes in, the phone in your hand will ring. The question is, will you answer? Play now, only on Netflix.
The U.S. Marshals were involved in this case, and they were so invested in the case. Even one held on to the handcuffs that they used to arrest William Greer. It's a little trophy, I guess. What was it like interviewing them?
For me, this was one of the great delights of our show. Folks, we love doing stories in Texas because everyone seems to be a character actor down there. And these U.S. Marshals are right off of a cowboy set. They are plain talking, straight talking. They are absolutely driven. They have a saying they told us when we did the interview. Their saying is, justice is coming. It's just like something Clint Eastwood would say, right?
Wow.
I mean, that's the nature of these guys, is that Texas tradition from the Wild West days, the marshal was the law of the county. And these guys carry on that tradition with dedication, and they have enormous heart. I mean, don't you think they're special?
That's a good word for it. Yeah. I don't know. Have you ever done a story with the marshals before? Is this your first? Because it was my first, and I was so impressed with them.
I've done a marshal story in other states, but this is the first time in Texas.
I was super impressed with them. They're so helpful and warm and inviting, and you know, they couldn't do enough for us.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really special guys.
And who else would come up with Operation Catch-a-Toe?
Leslie Raymond is such a character. The guy with the big cowboy hat on, such a character.
But it was appropriate. He's missing a toe. That's a pretty distinctive feature. After a bike accident, William Greer loses his toe. What'd you make of the name?
I loved it.
Yeah.
And ultimately, they do catch not the toe but everything else, right? Because the toe is forever missing, but they caught everything else. They catch William Greer. He's started a new life, and I guess true to what you guys said about him as he was on the run, you know, he's found another lady, and he's heartbreakingly started another family.
Can we talk about the fact that he had the nerve to name his new son William?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just so stunning. The whole thing is so stunning.
Yeah. So William Greer's sentence for killing Tammy Myers is just 10 years. And with time served, he'll be free in maybe 3 years, perhaps even sooner. Why on earth was his sentence so short?
Well, that's the sentence for second-degree manslaughter. I mean, they sort of have to go with the sentencing guidelines, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think they had a choice. The minute he was sentenced, he was up for parole. They denied him, and in 2 years, he gets another bite at the apple. And then in 3 years, he's out
regardless, no matter what.
Right.
Did you talk to the district attorney? I mean, is it clear why they allowed Greer to plead down to a lesser charge, second-degree manslaughter, instead of first-degree murder? And the fact that they honored the plea, even though they never did find Tammy's body.
They sent us this statement, which we actually put in the show. We believe Greer was acting in good faith and tried to lead law enforcement to her body. So much time has passed and the terrain has changed, but we believe he tried. We just have that one statement from them that, you know, it's a clear statement, but it doesn't feel right.
Nikki and her family continued to search for her mother. Peter, you were present for a search of Tammy's remains, and you actually participated in the prayer circle that they had there. What was that like?
It was deeply emotional. We all felt a tie to Nikki. We'd spent a lot of time with her, and she's such a big-hearted person and has gone through so much pain. And when you see the volunteers out there, you could understand how Nikki shed some tears for the first time around us and also had all of this hope. It was inspiring and it was heartbreaking.
I was standing next to Peter during that prayer circle and I could tell that he was getting a little emotional. So I whipped out my iPhone and got a shot of him. I thought it was kind of a nice moment.
Mm-hmm.
It was powerful. And we hope against hope that this circle can be closed for Nikki, but it's going to be very difficult. And that was part of the emotion for us as journalists out there. Let's hope when EquiSearch goes back out there, maybe they'll luck out. Maybe Nikki's dream will finally be realized.
Wow. Well, of course, another great hour. Judy, Peter, thank you so much. This has been another fantastic, fascinating discussion.
Thank you.
Thanks, Anne Marie.
Always a pleasure.
Join us next Tuesday for another Postmortem and watch 48 Hours on Saturdays, 10, 9 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus. And if you are liking the show, please rate and review 48 Hours on Apple Podcasts and follow 48 Hours wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen ad-free on the Amazon Music and Wondery app or with a 48 Hours Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts.